Back in drier times, country life headed to a farm in Canterbury's Selwyn district. Cosmo Kentish Barnes is beside a stream with a couple of farmers who are members of a group helping to keep the waterways and the catchment clean and healthy, despite the intensive farming further upstream. Ellesmere Sustainable Agriculture, or ESAI, is not new. In fact, it's been going for two decades. They've received government money to help fund one of their initiatives, Project Tinuku. First up, Cosmo talks to David Burkett.
We're at the Jolly's Brook here in Ellesmere, and Jolly's Brook is one of the lowland streams, many lowland streams that flow through our region here. It drains a lot of the water out of our area, but goes through, and a lot of it ends up in Te Waihora or Lake Ellesmere. So, you know, we're well aware of the challenges that the lake has, and these streams that flow into it are a crucial part of how we can mitigate some of those problems.
And there's a lot of planting going on here right now.
Yeah, we've been very lucky. We started off essentially as an irrigation society looking at water issues, and as regulations evolved and the environment we operate in has evolved, we've changed to become Ellesmere Sustainable Agriculture. So that's worked very well. So we essentially, as a collective group, we're representing about 120 farmers and enable them to do things like this planting we see here today.
What other things does Ellesmere Sustainable Agriculture do for local farmers?
So we've been obviously helping them with regulations has been the big one. We're very lucky to have a planner within our committee or in our membership, and she's been an absolute amazing resource for us to submit on regulations and submit in a way that's not saying they're not needed, but more saying, you know, this approach may be more beneficial. Mm-hmm. So that's one area, but as we've gone along, we've had requests from our members, you know, can we help in a number of different ways? And that's where the extension project comes in, running courses and things for our members. So we also look at the effect on the well-being of our members as well. So as these regulations have come on, we have noticed a change in the well-being and the attitude and approach of farmers. They are getting a little bit downtrodden, so we are aiming to, you know, help give them some positive approaches and help that well-being issue, which we know is happening across all farming.
And you are treasurer for the society.
Yeah, it's really looking after the money, subs and so forth. But once we got the MPI projects, there's quite a considerable amount of accounting. So we have got some external help in to help us with some of that. So we're really lucky to get this money that the government gives us. So, you know, it's really important that as an organisation we can show that we're really good stewardships of that money and that we are putting it to very good use.
How much money have you received so far?
The initial funding for the Tinuku project was $1.8 million. And we got an additional $400,000 in year one as well. So in total, there's $2.2 million, and that's spread over 3 years.
My name is Jo Fern, and I am the Extension Project Coordinator. So the Tinuku project came out of Ellesmere Sustainable Agriculture. With that funding, we needed to create a new project. So it's the Tinuku project, but basically we're helping not only our own members, ESAI members, but others in the local community.
How many people have been employed so far through the Tinuku project?
I think it's averaged out at about 35 a month, which is really good. So that's not just, you know, we've got guys like Tom and Joseph here who are doing the restoration work, but it's also, you know, the workshops that we're running. So we're employing caterers to cater for those. We're employing people to facilitate those. We are also, with the Jobs for Nature, we've got staff working at local nurseries. It's been really widespread with the amount of work that we're providing.
Now, David, what are some of the biggest challenges farmers in this area have been facing over the past 20 years?
The numerous. I think because we have Lake Ellesmere or Te Waihora in our zone, we have been a little bit of a guinea pig from a regulations point of view. So a lot of the regulations have been applied to this zone first. But in a way, that's probably given us a bit of an insight into how to manage those regulations. And, you know, I guess to start with, a lot of them were around water and how we were, irrigation consents were tied to water. But more recently, it's more around nutrient and nutrient loss and how we can manage that both on the farm but also in the environment, which we're trying to do here, obviously, with the riparian planting.
Mm. And there are a couple of permanent water sampling stations in the area. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we were wanting to understand, you know, the background and the baselines of our of the water quality in our zone. So we've got identified two sites, which are beside streams or drains, and we've put permanent measuring in there, which is telemetered, so we can gather that information every 15-odd minutes. And so that will hopefully give us what's happening as a baseline throughout the season, because there will be fluctuations during the season, depending on flow and water quality and quantity. Because all these things we're doing to try to mitigate, such as the planting, we want to understand, you know, how much of an effect are you actually having in solving this problem. So because it's been done quite often, we should better see any changes, even if it's within a season.
Why do you think the water quality has, you know, declined so much? And how long do you think it will take to turn this around?
Oh, look, you know, to be honest, if you look at what's happened in Canterbury and the land use change, the intensification in agriculture, without a doubt, I think it's pretty naive to think that that hasn't had an impact on the receiving environment. So there's already multiple changes in management happening on farms, and you know that will take a long time to come through. Some areas will turn around quicker than others, and we are at the bottom end of the catchment, which essentially the drain plug of the system, and we do have quality and quantity coming onto us, which we have no control over. So I guess how we look at it is we say, well, let's control what we can within our own catchment, and that's exactly what we're doing here. But in saying that, we are now working with likes of CPW above us. We all realise that we need to understand what the whole catchment's doing, not just in our catchment down here at the Lowland Streams area.
And that's Central Plains Water?
Yeah, Central Plains Water. So they we're having conversations with them at the moment around a whole catchment project, so we can understand, you know, those exact questions. What is the big challenge across the catchment, and what are the areas that we need to really focus on?
Tell me about your farm, what you grow, and your family connection with the land.
So we're an arable farm. Well, in arable farms, we grow crops, and most of those crops are for seed. So we grow a wide range of crops from wheats and barleys, rye grasses and white clovers for seed, peas and beans for seed and for processing, as well as vegetable seeds, so radish. And a lot of those crops are export up to the Northern Hemisphere. And from a management point of view, I guess we've been probably 25 years understanding and knowing that our soil is a really important part, so we've been managing our soil well for those 25 years, which has allowed us to have a low input cropping system. And it's taken time, but we've got there, and we do have a lower input than the average, and as we're seeing at the moment with inflation and fertiliser prices, and that's a really good place to be in. In a way, it's about working with nature, and the planting is the same thing as well. You know, the planting is actually nature doing the work for us by filtering and allowing growth over the streams. So I just take that same approach into the paddock and in the farming system of, you know, making sure that we all the beneficial things that nature provides us, we can utilise the best we can.
My name's Johanna Blakely. I'm the Riparian Project Coordinator for the Tinaku Project. So for my role, I get to come on a lot of site visits, meet the farmers, the landowners who have potential project sites. They take us down to look at their generally waterways, wetlands, sometimes it's along drains, areas that they've identified that they think could really benefit from native restoration planting. So we look at the site, we assess it against some of our criteria, like how could this really benefit for biodiversity, water quality improvement, and then I draw up a plan, so looking at the soil types, the type of plants that would best suit the site, the types of plants that could best deal with the issues there, so if that's going to be filtering overland runoff, shading the waterway, stabilising the banks. Coming up with plant lists, ordering plants from the nurseries, getting the contractors on board, and then, yeah, we have planting contractors who come and do the actual planting and maintain the sites for 3 years.
And how many sites have you worked on so far?
So 40 planting sites, that's across about 25 to 30 different landowners. So some people have a couple of sites. They might have a couple of waterways or a waterway and a wetland, and just for the sake of location, we manage those separately.
Tell me about the site that we are at now. What are you planting, and how would you describe this location?
It's a small spring-fed waterway, and it's got some existing remnants of native vegetation, which is relatively uncommon in this area. There's some mature Pittosporum tenofolium, cabbage trees, sedges. So basically what's happened, we've come and taken out a whole bunch of willows that were overhanging the creek. The farmers put in a new fence to protect the waterway, and we've come and planted with Carrick Sector right along the waterway edge, then a range of different native species further back along the bank, so there to shade and stabilise the waterway. A bit further downstream, there's a site where there's a big lot of overland runoff coming, so the farmer there has actually set the fence back quite far, and we've planted a whole lot of wetland species that should be able to filter and really reduce any sediment and pollutants coming in from that runoff. So yeah.
What is the water quality like in this creek here?
The water quality in Jolly's Brook is actually relatively good. It's connected to, they call it the Little Rakaia Zone, so it's being flushed out by the Rakaia River. It's got really low nitrates. Probably the main issue in this waterway is more to do with sedimentation, which it's partly just naturally soft soils in this area. So we're really looking at habitat improvement, as well as just making sure that we maintain those low nitrate levels in the waterway where possible through plant absorption.
How many plants have you planted here at this site so far?
Yeah, so at this site we've got just over 2,000 plants in the ground. The farmer had already planted a couple of hundred off his own bat about 5 years ago, so yeah. We try, where possible, to get eco-sourced plants, seed sourced from local native remnants in the area.
And you've got some people planting right now across the creek?
Yeah, so Tom and Joseph, they're here today doing some planting. They've been training up and gaining a lot of skills in native restoration work through as part of the Jobs for Nature aspect of the project.
What do you enjoy most about doing this this work?
I love getting out. I love meeting a range of people, being able to come alongside and support them. Often it's an area that they're really motivated to do something about. It's an area that I'm really passionate about, plants and water quality, water health. So I love being able to work with people and actually see changes on the ground. It's really, really positive space to be in.
So I'm Thomas Hilston. I'm currently working for Ellesmere Sustainable Agriculture as a planter. I do plant maintenance and wetland and riparian planting. So a lot of planting along drains around farms and in the catchment area around Lake Ellesmere.
How long have you been doing this for?
So I've been with Ellesmere Sustainable Ag for about a year now, and I got into it through a course I did with Department of Conservation, the Te Ara Atawhai course. That was held for 9 weeks.
What were you doing before you started this sort of work?
So I was dismantling vehicles for a firm, Nissan King Isuzu Parts World. So I was doing that for about 3 to 4 years.
Gosh, it's quite a different job.
Yes, it's very different.
And you've also started your own contracting business.
Yes, so I started my own contracting business through Ellesmere Sustainable Agriculture. So I run Kerikere Contracting, which does start to finish planting and maintenance, any type of weed spraying.
I'm Jo German-Benny. I've been on Ellesmere Sustainable Ag Committee since 2014. In that time I've been sort of in coordinating our communication. Since we've had our MPI project, Jobs for Nature project, I've been able to step back and our employees have been able to do that, but I've taken on coordinating an education project within our Tinaku project.
And what does that involve, that education project?
Back in 2019, our committee held a strategic planning day for our members. It was 10 years since we'd been incorporated society, We were all feeling fairly despondent that winter. Farming seemed to be a hard game, and we felt like we needed to do something positive for our members. So we decided to have an education project to engage the young people in our district with what we were doing. We recognised we were going to need some kaitiaki guardians of the planting that we were doing, and we hope that it will continue into the future, and obviously the young people in our district will be involved in that. We also wanted to promote primary industry careers, and we were thinking about succession planning in our committee. Most of us have got grey hair, or we're trying to hide grey hair. So we really want to encourage the young people into our industry and get them involved in our group.
Has that been quite a challenge, working out how to generate interest in agriculture locally?
We went and spoke to Ellesmere College when we got this project up and going, and we realised that if we could support the Gateways program, that was probably one very easy way of supporting young people into primary industries and other sectors. So we funded 6 Gateway students in our first year, 10 this last year. So a lot of them are coming on to our local farms. We've also been able to fund them to come on courses that ESAI runs for our members. For example, we've recently had a chainsaw course. We've had a chemical handlers course. We've got a forklift course coming up.
Very handy.
So those students have been able to come along to our courses and gain skills that are going to be highly valuable for when they go out into the workforce. We've also encouraged our ESAI members to take Gateway students, because it's quite hard to find businesses to take students.
Do you have a student on your farm?
I do, actually. We have a young lad called Logan who comes along once a week. He often has to stay after 3 o'clock, so after school hours. We've really enjoyed having him on our farm. It makes you think about what you're doing, because you have to explain to a young person what you're doing and why. That's been really good. It's been beneficial to us. We had him stay and look after the farm, and we went away for a couple of days on holiday, so that was an added bonus. And I think farming can be quite insular sometimes, so having someone come in and work with them, a young person, especially one that's maybe not your own child, is really positive, and it gives you good vibes. Mm.
What do you farm?
We're a mixed up farm, sheep and cropping farm. So barley, peas, white clover, ryegrass seed, and we have fine wool sheep.
How has Ellesmere Sustainable Agriculture impacted on your farming system? What have you gained from being a member?
Mm. Like many farmers in our district, we had to go through obtaining an irrigation consent. This is 10, 15 years ago. That was quite a stressful time for a lot of farmers. ESAI helped everyone through that. The same thing's happened since with farm environment plans. So we've run a lot of workshops so that farmers have been able to work through that themselves if they didn't want a consultant to do that, which I think is quite valuable. There's nothing like designing or developing and writing a plan yourself to actually know what's in it, rather than it being written by someone and stuck in the bottom drawer. And our farm's not actually now down near the lake, but a lot of the farmers around the lake have dealt with cultural issues and requirements, and phosphorus sediment runoff requirements. So we've helped, ESAI has helped farmers work through all those different regulations.
What's the thing that you've done so far through ESAI that makes you most proud?
Our Tanaku project has been amazing and uplifting. It's something positive we've done for our district. It's the first time ESAI sought outside funding, because we've been funding this for 20 years on our own. So really exciting to get funding to carry that on and to expand it and to have employees that we now have in our Tanaku project, our project manager, our riparian manager, our extension project manager, to have people paid to keep their eye on the ball and do that, because as volunteer committee members, there's only so many hours in a day. So we always had more we wanted to do, and we're a bit limited with time. So that's been very exciting.
Jo Benny ending Cosmo's story. Cosmo was also talking to David Burkett, another Ellesmere Sustainable Ag member, as well as Tinuku Project's Joanna Blakely, Tom Hilston and Joe Fern.